Case number 25-1828 from the Eastern District of Missouri, United States versus I-44 Truck Center and Wrecker Service.
Mr. Ghazali.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Pardon my voice if it starts to crack. Okay. I represent I-44 Truck Center, which is headquartered in St. Clair, Missouri. In June of 2017, an employee had been terminated and filed a retaliation complaint with OSHA. OSHA came in and did an inspection in June, issued a $5,000 penalty for alleged safety violations. OSHA did not notify responsible officials of I-44, however. It served a citation on a tow truck driver at the Rolla satellite facility. Moving forward to October of 2017, OSHA followed up with an inspection because it never heard back from the company about the original citation. And it served this citation for the follow-up inspection on a mechanic, also at the Rolla satellite facility.
And that's where the violations were in Rolla, right?
Yes, right.
Yes, proceed.
Right, yeah. And the next year, in 2018, OSHA issued a notice that it found no violations. It sent that notice properly to the corporate address.
I thought there was still a fire extinguisher, counsel.
In the area.
I thought there was still a fire extinguisher problem in the very last one.
Well, there was. The original citation, one of the items was there were two fire extinguishers that weren't fully charged. Right. When they came back in October, the guy that was there just went out and bought two more fire extinguishers. So that matter was taken care of. But the problem was there was never a contest notice in the first place on any of the citation or penalties and so forth. So now we move forward to January of 23 when this lawsuit was filed on behalf of the Department of Labor. All of a sudden, what was $5,000 is now $140,000. And by the way, this was served in St. Clair at the registered agent's office, etc., not in Rolla. This lawsuit, when it was served on the employer in February, was the first notice to the employer of this matter. And if under the OSHA statute, it was too late to do anything with the penalties. The way the OSHA statute's set up is that a citation served with notification of penalties, there's all sorts of paperwork they send with it. You need to contest it within a certain period of time afterwards. If not contested, then it becomes final, unreviewable. There's two issues in the case. First is the statute of limitations issue. We feel the suit was filed too late. And the lack of proper notice to the employer here. And they're somewhat interrelated because if proper notice had been given, I have no doubt that this $5,000 issue would have been taken care of in 2017. Regarding the statute of limitations issue, we believe that the 5-year statute of limitations in 28 U.S.C. 2462 applies. This is an enforcement action by the government to collect a financial penalty issued by the Department of Labor, OSHA. The complaint says that, the second page, this is an enforcement action to collect a financial penalty issued by OSHA. 2462 applies to, quote, suits for the enforcement of a civil fine, penalty, pecuniary or otherwise. The government takes a position herein that collection of debt is different than enforcing a penalty. That's wrong. The district court itself says calling a penalty a debt takes the case out of 2462, which is wrong. The district court actually held, and I'm going to quote this, if plaintiff brought suit to enforce penalties under the OSHA statute, then the limitations period contained in 2462 would apply. unquote. And this suit was filed out of time. The thing is, under the Debt Collection Act, DCIA, there is no statute of limitations. There's none. There's no statute of limitations in the OSHA statute either. But 2462 clearly applies to OSHA citations under the clear language. The briefs cite some other cases in which Congress did specify statute of limitations and held that 2462 did not apply because there were specifically other statutes applied. The Lamb case involved the IRS 10-year statute of limitations. The Mulliken case, a 6-year statute of limitations. And if you look at the 3M case out of the D.C. Circuit, which is a 1994 case, I believe, it states, quote, 2462 applies to federal government in all civil penalty cases unless Congress specifically provides otherwise, unquote. And we move forward in time. We have two Supreme Court cases, the Cabelli and the Kokesh cases, in which the SEC was trying to enforce penalties. The Supreme Court stated, a penalty is a penalty for purposes of 2462. It's intended to defer, not compensate. And they stress the importance of statutes of limitations in general. Now,
counsel, let me ask you, as I read the Seventh Circuit's case in Obin and the Tenth Circuit's case in Blanca, I think they're trying to say if it is, quote, pure debt collection, unquote. Now, that's in one of the cases.
That's not
the Supreme... And that's what both... It's the... 10th Circuit's case and the 7th Circuit's case. I think that what they're trying to say is it pure debt collection, then it's under the DCIA, no statute of limitations. Is this case, then, a pure debt collection case?
They're trying to collect money, no question about it. But the money is a penalty. OSHA penalty, it was issued not because anybody was harmed. The government didn't suffer any harm. The public suffered a harm, allegedly, through an unsafe workplace. And the penalty was issued to deter future violations, to punish, not to compensate for an injury. This is indicated in the cases that the government has cited not applying 2462. The Blanca in the Mississippi Development of Economic Development cases, in which, in both of those cases, the court did not apply 2462 because the relief sought was compensatory, not punitive. That's a very important distinction. The Kokesh Supreme Court case drew the distinction. Compensatory means when you compensate a victim, including the government, for its loss. Punitive situation is a wrong to the public sought for purposes of punishment and to deter others from future violations. The district court held that the dollars sought herein are, quote, compensatory and remedial in nature rather than a punishment imposing a fine. That is absolutely wrong. There's no question that the dollars sought herein are punitive in nature. In fact, that's what the complaint alleged. So this DCIA did not negate 2462. And you mentioned the old Ben case. That's 50 years old. I don't think it's good law anymore. It's after the Supreme Court's decisions 30 years later. So we believe that the statute of limitations of 5 years should have applied herein. And the case should have been dismissed on that basis alone. Moving to the issue of improper notice, the undisputed evidence herein is that OSHA served the citations and the penalty notices upon non-managerial persons at a satellite facility that had no regular mailbox. It's undisputed that company management never saw the citations until after the suit was filed. The statute requires OSHA to serve the employer. There's no way that a tow truck driver in a satellite facility can be considered an employer, the employer. Same thing for the mechanic. of in the October inspection. They need to serve the employer, which under the Third Circuit Buckley case, which is exactly on point, by the way, that means someone with the authority to issue paychecks, issue payments, resolve government disputes and investigations. Anyway, the government says in response to that, well, why didn't I-44 contact the Department of Labor and ask for it to take the case back? Well, the district court held that that would have been futile. It would have been at that point. The Buckley Court, however, Third Circuit, said, we think this case should be remanded to the Secretary of Labor of OSHA for to reopen the contest period so that the employer has an opportunity to address the initial penalties and the initial citations. Yes.
In the Third Circuit case, though, it was raised to the agency, right?
Excuse me?
In the Third Circuit case, the question of notice was raised to the agency, at least, right?
I believe so. And the agency
yes.
said no. I mean, that's right. What the district court held, that it would have been futile for I-44 to go back to the agency and ask for it. The agency's position has always been, once the 15 days have passed, it's unreviewable. It's done. You can't reopen it. But the court can, in fact, as in Buckley Court did, order the Department of Labor to reopen the contest period, which is what we asked the court to do.
Counsel, this is Judge Smith. If you were to win on the question of the applicability of the statute of limitations on the government's ability to collect, would there be a necessity to address the notice question? Because essentially you would that would end the collection against your client.
I'm sorry, would you repeat that? There would be
would winning your win if you were to win on the first issue as to the application of a statute of limitations on the government's ability to obtain the monies that they seek, would it still be necessary to address the notice issue?
If you dismiss the case on the statute of limitations basis, no, it's over. The case should be dismissed with prejudice. Only if you find that there's not a statute of limitation violation do you get to the notice issue. But either one, we think the district court erred in both of those issues. We did raise the question of the excessiveness of this fine. Is the fine grossly disproportional to the gravity of the offense? Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you for the argument, counsel. Mr. DeBray.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Anthony DeBray for the United States. Before I begin, I would like to set the record straight regarding three statements that were just made by my friend on the other side. First, I-44's counsel said that the second violation, which is the notification of failure to abate, was served on a mechanic and that the company management did not ever know about or see the violations until it was served with the complaint. I would direct the court's attention to the fact that the district court found as an undisputed fact in this case when granting summary
judgment. What page are you on, if you can tell us what page you're on of what's
sure.
in the back of our brief?
Sure, the joint appendix, page 412.
Can you tell us what it's on in the back here? What page of the judge's opinion is it?
Oh.
At the bottom of the page, what does it say? 4 of 8, 3 of 8? It's 8 pages long, right?
I'm talking about, yes, you're right.
Well, there's one that's 6 and one that's 8. Tell me which one I should look at. If you can't tell, say so. We'll figure it out.
No, I mean, it's joint appendix, page 412.
Okay, well.
So it's page 3 of 7.
3 of 7.
Yep. Hmm. And on that particular page, the district court found as an undisputed fact when granting summary judgment that Carl Bennett was a manager for the defendant at the time that the notification came in. There's also evidence on the record when Mr. Bennett signed the certification of corrective action form, he signed that as a manager, and that's on Joint Appendix page 308. In addition, Your Honor, I believe I-44's counsel said that the complaint said that this was an enforcement action and that this was punitive in nature. The complaint does not say anything to that effect at all, and that's on the Joint Appendix pages 1 through 7. Moving on, Your Honor, I would like to start first by addressing the statute of limitations arguments, specifically 2462 and why it does not apply to debt collection suits under the DCIA. Specifically, 2462 does not apply because Congress did not clearly intend for 2462 to apply to the collection of debt. It's well settled that the government is not bound by any statute of limitations unless Congress clearly imposes one, and any statute of limitations sought to be applied to bar the government must receive a strict construction in favor of the government. Looking at the plain language of 2462, it applies only for the enforcement of a civil fine, penalty, or forfeiture. It does not use the terms collection or debt. It makes no specific or general reference whatsoever to the collection of debt already owed to the government. If Congress had intended for the statute of limitations to apply to the collection of debt, it could have easily inserted those words into the statute, but it didn't. And this court should not read that language into the statute where it doesn't exist, especially when the statute of limitations must be strictly construed in favor of the government.
How does one ever enforce a civil fine and not have a collection of a debt under your theory?
Certainly, when the OSHA agency takes its enforcement actions, which is by issuing a citation after an inspection where they're found violations, or issues a notification, which it did in this case, those are enforcement procedures under the OSHA Act.
Right, right. I get that. But what I'm saying is that if you actually try and get them to pay the civil fine, it's always a debt collection in your world, right?
No.
Even though 2462 doesn't, you know, it expressly provides otherwise, right? I mean, because I'm having a hard time with how do I collect the fine? And you say, I mean, it hasn't been reduced to a debt in the sense that, like, okay, I've brought the action, there's a judgment, now I'm collecting on the judgment. The collection of that judgment debt is the collection of a debt. But the enforcement of a fine seems to be exactly what's going on here. And maybe I just don't understand.
Sure. So this is not an enforcement action. This is a debt collection under the DCIA. And I say that
how does one enforce a fine other than saying pay the fine?
No.
So that's what I want to ask you. If you look at 2462, you look at the plain language of the statute, it says, or proceeding for the enforcement of any civil fine. How does one attempt to enforce the payment of a civil fine in any way other than what you're doing right here?
So you have to look at the OSHA statute, specifically the OSHA Act, the Occupational Safety and Health Act, contains provisions to impose penalties. That's 29 U.S.C. 666. And specifically, the OSHA Act contains another provision, which is entitled Enforcement Procedures. That's 29 U.S.C. 659. And that particular section authorizes OSHA agency to take enforcement actions by issuing the citation and issuing the notification. Those are listed enforcement actions under the OSHA Act under the enforcement procedure section at 659. Once that citation and notification become a final order, the enforcement actions are concluded because the citation and notification have now become a final order that cannot be appealed to any court. Once the enforcement actions by the agency are concluded, then we move into the realm of debt collection. And then under the DCIA, we can collect a debt, which under the definition of debt, it refers to any amount of funds that has been determined to be owed to the government. So now we're talking about debt that has previously been determined to be owed. So now we're in debt collection, which takes us out of the enforcement realm, which takes us out of 2462.
Well, counsel, the real answer to Judge Erickson's questions are defined by Congress to be the same thing. And that's what you quoted the first sentence of the DCIA B1. But it says, a claim includes without limitation. I'm in the DCIA B1 that you just quoted the first sentence of. A claim includes any fines or penalties assessed by an agency. Right?
Correct.
Yeah. So the DCA is right there. Now, and I'll get my terms confused, so I've got to be careful. How long has the general statute been around, the 2462, I think it is, statute?
I believe it's been around for a while. But if
How long is a while? Is it the Civil War statute?
That I'm not aware of.
Okay. Anyhow, so that's 2462. Does it somewhere say unless Congress provides otherwise or not?
It does.
Okay. Where is that in 2462?
2462 says at the very beginning, except as otherwise provided by an act of Congress.
Okay. So that's been around forever. When was the DCIA enacted?
You know? 1996.
Good. Thank you.
Going back to your initial question about the fact that the DCIA uses the word penalty in the definition of a debt.
Right.
A debt includes many things, including a penalty. But just because the DCIA uses the term penalty, that doesn't mean that suddenly 2462 is triggered. In fact, we know 2462 does not apply to debt collection actions, as shown by the Seventh Circuit's decision in Old Ben, the Tenth Circuit's decision in Blanca, and the Fifth Circuit's decision in the Mississippi Department of Economics case. All of those cases found that 2462 does not apply to actions to collect a debt.
Is there any circuit that's gone the other way in your view?
No.
But this court is not. This circuit has not addressed it, right?
Correct. But I would direct the court's attention to Blanca because I think it helps clarify a lot of these issues that we're talking about. So in the Blanca case, the Tenth Circuit held 2462 does not apply to debt collection activities under the DCIA. And in doing so, it emphasized the significant difference between, on the one hand, 2462, which it held applies to punitive agency actions that penalize, which is what I was talking about earlier, the OSHA citation that assessed the penalties, and then distinguish that from the DCIA on the other side, which it held applies to debt collection of funds owed to the government. And it specifically declined to follow Kakesh, which is cited in I-44's brief, and held that it says the Supreme Court has made clear that 2462 governs only actions that penalize. The DCIA, by contrast, is aimed at pure debt collection. 2462 applies to punitive agency action. The DCIA applies to debt collection of funds owed to the United States, end quote. So I think at this time, I'd like to turn the court's attention to the affirmative defense issue because that was raised by I-44's counsel, unless there's other questions on the 2462 matter. Hearing none, the district court did not abuse its discretion by striking I-44's affirmative defense alleging improper notice, and that's because the purported defense was insufficient as a matter of law. First, it improperly challenged the underlying penalties that previously were imposed at the agency level, even though I-44 was statutorily prohibited from doing so under 29 U.S.C. 659. In particular, Section 659 states that if an employer does not contest a citation or penalty, then the citation and penalty shall be deemed a final order of the commission, not subject to review by any court or agency. Here, I-44 admitted it did not contest the underlying citation and that the assessments of penalties became final orders. And the district court correctly found that the underlying penalties had become final orders and were not subject to review. Accordingly, the district court correctly ruled that I-44 can't challenge those underlying penalties or the reason for their imposition. In doing so, the district court correctly relied on the Donovan case from the Tenth Circuit, which held that the district court has no jurisdiction or authority to evaluate the propriety of the previously assessed penalty and that the defendant can't challenge it in a subsequent collection case in the district court.
Is it different if the challenge is that we were improperly served and never received notice as a matter of law?
It is not different. In fact, that argument can and should have been made at the agency level by contacting OSHA. There is certainly an administrative process and a proper venue to hear that argument, but it is not the district court. So,
what about their claim that they never received a sufficient notice to appear and to make the claim?
Well, it's clear they did at some point receive the notification because they filled out the certification of corrective action and said, oh, we are now buying 3 extra fire extinguishers, and now that issue has been abated. It's also clear they received the initial citation because upon reinspection, 2 out of the 3 violations had been abated by the time of the reinspection. So we know they received it. And then we know they received the complaint because they were served in this case, which also attached the citation and the notification. In fact, if you look at Joint Appendix, page 96, that outlines at least 13 separate instances in which I-44 was made aware of these citations and penalties prior to being served with the complaint. And at any point in time after receiving notice or receiving the complaint even, and even now, this avenue is still available to I-44, they could go to an administrative law judge, file a notice of contest, file a motion saying it's untimely because of X, Y, and Z, because we never received proper notice, whatever argument they want to make. At the agency level, then an evidentiary hearing would be held to determine.
And they still do that?
Absolutely.
They could do that tomorrow, right?
They can do it today if they wanted to.
Oh, even today.
And then it's up to the administrative law judge to determine exactly what happened. Was notice sent? Was it received? Then they would make the determination if notice was proper, if the untimely contest should be accepted, and if that 15-day window can be extended. And then if the defendant passes that hurdle, they can litigate the liability of the citations at the agency level. And then if they're unhappy with the ALJ's decision, they could appeal it to the commission.
And if they win, do you give them back their money?
Well, they haven't paid any money.
No, but if you succeed?
If they succeed at the agency level, is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
Then if they're successful in saying they got improper notice for whatever reason, then they would go on to a liability determination before the ALJ. Were these safety regulations violated? And it'd be up to the ALJ to make that determination. And then that issue is appealable to the commission. And then that decision by the commission is appealable to the Eighth Circuit. But it skips the district court entirely, which proves our point that the district court was not the proper venue to raise these arguments in the first place.
If the ALJ held an evidentiary hearing, would that remove the penalties?
Well,
you see what I mean? Because if you're now collecting the initial assessment, would that vacate the penalties and so start the whole penalty process over again?
It depends on what the ALJ determines.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a point. Mm-hmm.
So I see that I only have a few seconds left, and my time's almost over. Unless there are any other questions, I'd be happy to answer. Otherwise, the government asks this court to affirm all of the district court's rulings. Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Gazzoli.
Very brief rebuttal here. Whether Mr. Bennett was a manager or not, I will say that the only evidence on the record is that he was not a manager.
Is he the one that embezzled the money later, too?
I'm sorry?
Is he the one who embezzled the money
yes,
later?
Right. And he was a mechanic. He embezzled $100,000.
Right. Proceed. Yes. Proceed.
And he had no authority to resolve a government investigation or pay a fine or anything like that either. There's no evidence of that. Basically, we've got a due process issue with this lack of notice. This company was entitled to receive notice of the alleged violation and take the process through because it wasn't notified by the government. It was denied that opportunity. And everything that the U.S. attorney says here is it would have been futile to do that. That's what the Third Circuit said you can't do. Regarding the statute of limitations, simple issue, like you say, hey, let's call this fine a debt We don't have to worry about statute of limitations now.
That's what Congress may have done. Do you think Congress did that? Because they define a debt as including a penalty.
Congress left the concept of an administrative fine and penalty in place. Okay. And the distinction that the courts have made is whether it's a punitive or a compensatory money sought. There's no question in this case, as the complaint itself alleges, this is a punitive fine. It was directed to the public, harm to the public, not individual, or even the government was not harmed. We believe that the case should have been dismissed, and we ask this court to do that with prejudice. If the court does not do that under the statute of limitations basis, we ask it to give us due process and let the company contest its citations as it would allow to do that under the law had it been properly notified. Thank you very much.
Thank you both counsel for the argument. Case 25-1828 is submitted for decision by the court, and counsel are excused.